Welcome to the Part 3A's Philosophy, Religion, and Science talks for this afternoon. I'll be chairing the session. I'm Paul Arbison. Welcome to you. We are starting this session, and we're going to be slipping the time by roughly, what is it, about 9 minutes, 10 minutes. So I want to make sure we can get all these talks in. As Walter was saying, we want to make sure that we wrap this up by 5:30 for the ASA business meeting. So we have three talks this afternoon, and our first speaker is John W. Hall, whose talk is titled, How to Think About Chance and Purpose. And John Hall is a biostatistician. He's worked in various agencies in Canada doing work in design of experiments in agriculture biology. So he's going to be telling us some insights about chance and purpose. So John, if you want to take over.
The first thing I have to do, I think, is deal with this rather presumptuous title. After all, there may be more than one way to think about chance and purpose, but what I hope you'll have by the end of the talk is at least one perspective on how a person might think about these two things and how they relate. So first of all, we have to look at how people have thought about chance and purpose in the past and give you a few quotes. First of all, from about 1988, in the thinking of a philosopher, Peter van Inwagen at Notre Dame, and he was writing an article called Chance in a World Sustained by God, and this is what he says, what I shall mean by saying that an event is a chance occurrence or a state of affairs is a matter of chance or due to chance is this. The event or state of affairs is without purpose or significance. It is not part of anyone's plan. It serves no one's end. It might very well not have been. Going forward to 2001, getting into a more scientific context, David N. Stamos, who is a philosopher at York University in Toronto, thinking about evolutionary biology and the source of mutations, wrote an article called Quantum Indeterminism and Evolutionary Biology, and he concludes, if it is indeed true that at least many of the mutations that feed natural selection are the product of quantum chance, then it does seem quite difficult, if not impossible, to reconcile this in any way with the hope of God-directed evolution. Going on, a reaction to that paper and several others, in the same year, another philosopher from Duke University this time, Alex Rosenberg, in his discussion note, Indeterminism, Probability, and Randomness in Evolutionary Theory, states this, without real randomness, it is always open to exponents of teleological explanation, whether theistic or otherwise, to hypothesize a force which arranges mutations in order to produce some preordained outcome that looks for all the world like natural selection over random variation. With real randomness, no such reconciliation of Darwinism and design is logically possible. Go forward 2 years. 2003, Alex Rosenberg again writing with somebody named Tamler Summers, and they write an article called Darwin's Nihilistic Idea, Evolution and the Meaninglessness of Life. And they refer here to evolution as the solvent algorithm. And they state the solvent algorithm deprives nature of purpose on the global and the local scale. With interpretations like these, is it any wonder that Christians are worried about current accounts or current descriptions of biological dynamics? But I have a trouble with their interpretations, because we humans construct systems of our own with stochastic processes, incorporated them in them, and used them for our own purposes. So there seems to be a dichotomy or a contradiction between what they're saying and what we actually do at times. Now, historically, the word chance is associated with purposelessness. So to get rid of that association, I'm going to replace it in what I talk about with the term stochastic. And the question of whether a stochastic process or the system of which it is a part has any purpose cannot be prejudged. We have to investigate the system itself. So then, just to review the distinction between a deterministic and a stochastic process, in a deterministic system, we have some conditions A, and under those conditions, we get output B. For a stochastic process, we have some conditions A. They're different conditions, so I've italicized the A. And the outcome is drawn from a particular set of outcomes, here represented by B1, B2, and B3. But we can't predict beforehand which one of these is going to occur. One of them will, we can't say. Perhaps the most familiar kind of stochastic process is radioactive decay. So here we have a piece of uraninite, the black stuff, with an icing of secondary uranium minerals. And if we took a counter and adjusted it, we can move it closer or farther away, and we adjust it so that on average we get 2.5 counts a minute. We know that in the various 1-minute time periods that we measure our counts, we're going to get varying counts. We may get 0 in one time period, 5 or 6 the next, 2 the next. And these occur with certain frequencies or probabilities, which are described by the Poisson distribution. So the vertical bars indicate the probability of the counts 1 to 6. And, of course, you could extend that on. I've just cut it off there to 7 and so on. This is one kind of process which generates stochastic outcomes. There's another one that is a little more subtle, and this deals with nonlinear dynamic systems. And a simple example of a nonlinear dynamic system is the Earth and the Sun under gravity rotating around each other with mutual attraction. And then if you add a third body, say you add the Moon going around the Earth or Mercury going around the Sun, you can get a nice, neat, well-behaved orbit, but not all orbits are well-behaved. And so in this next slide, we look here, and I have to explain this one a little bit. I've put in a thick horizontal bar, and the two mutually gravitating masses that I started off with are under the ends of the bar. That's just so you can tell where they are. Introduced a third body, which is light enough that it doesn't influence the first two, but it moves under gravity, and with the right initial position and velocity, you get this wool tangle that is the trajectory. And finally, it escapes off where the thick arrow is on your right-hand side. because this is a computer simulation, of course, we could run the simulation again, get exactly the same orbit if we had the same initial conditions. But in the systems I'm going to consider, first of all, the initial conditions may be hard to reproduce. You may have not an isolated system, but systems which perturb each other. You can get multiple systems interacting. And in that case, I would argue that you get things that, if not stochastic exactly, are very close. So let's take a look at some created systems of the kind I'm thinking with and think of a cool thought at the same time. Here's a face-off in hockey. If these face-offs were at center ice, say at the beginning of the game, that's as close to initial conditions as you get. And you can imagine that the system isn't very reproducible after that. Now, you just can't run the tape again. Which team is going to win here? It's going to depend on two things. First of all, is the relative strength of the two teams. And this might differ depending on whether they're at home or away. And the other thing that's going to determine which team will win the game is a stochastic element, which depends on the roughness of the ice, the bounce of the puck, the position of the stick when shots are taken, where all the players are blocking the goalie's view, and so on. And under these conditions, the outcome is pretty unpredictable. In fact, it's stochastic, and this was investigated in 1977 by a man named Gary Mullett. And he decided, after investigating the data on the National Hockey League, where the teams are pretty equally matched, not completely, but very close, that it followed a particular statistical distribution. So if we had a team whose relative strength allowed it to, on average, produce 2.5 goals a game, sometimes it'd get no goals, sometimes it'd get 2, sometimes it'd get 7, and the distribution would look something like this. Where have we seen this before? Of course, this is the distribution for radioactivity. Entirely different system, very similar dynamics. Now, what's the implication of this? The implication is that in the National Hockey League, on any given night, any given team has the potential to beat any other team. That keeps up the interest of the fans, fills the stands, means you can sell the TV rights, and so on, and plays into one of the objectives of the owners of the teams, and that is to make a profit on the team ownership. You'll notice that the owner's objective or their purpose does not depend on the outcome of the games. So that any outcome from the set of possible outcomes generated by these distributions for the two teams will contribute to their goal. They're all purpose equivalent as far as the team owners are concerned. For the team players, it's a little different because they want to get to the top of the league in games one, get to the playoffs, get bonuses for playing in the playoffs, and so on. And in their case, only a proportion of the possible outcomes of the possible scores, those where their team gets more goals than the other team, will contribute to this purpose. So their purpose can be frustrated, or their purposes can be frustrated rather than achieved. We'll go to a second system, which is a little bit different, with lotteries, and here we have to set aside all the ethical issues that we normally worry about and just look at it as a system with stochastic component. In my local lottery, the winning numbers, and we'll just consider the grand prize, is produced by generating a set of 6 numbers from the numbers 1 to 49, and it's done with a machine that looks something like this, not exactly, so that we have 49 balls in a rotating drum with the numbers 1 to 49 on the balls, and they're rotated and agitated for a while. The sphere mixing problem is known to be a chaotic process, and I presume it applies here. And then after the appropriate amount of time, which may not be precisely controlled, in fact, intentionally is not precisely controlled, 6 balls are released at the bottom, and the numbers on the ball determine the winning ticket. So again, this is a system which has embedded in it a method for generating stochastic outcomes. The owners of the lottery, which in my case are various provincial governments, it doesn't matter to them what the numbers come up as, they still make a profit. That's the way they've designed the system. So that no matter what numbers come out, what outcome is generated, they achieve their purposes. Of course, for the participants who own the tickets for various number combinations, there again, their purposes are achieved only by a subset and can be as easily frustrated as accomplished, and in fact, much more so. So to summarize then, for each case we have an outcome set. For the lottery, it's the approximately 14 million six-number combinations from 49. For hockey games, it's the binary pairs of scores. We've noted the differences between global purposes, which are always achieved no matter what the outcome is, and local ones, which depend on a subset and can be frustrated. There's flexibility in purposes. A recreational league in hockey looks much the same as a professional league. Of course, the skill level is different, but you'll notice that the purposes of the league are entirely different. There's no profit motive in the recreational league. Fourth thing to note is probabilities. In the lottery, every sextuple has the same probability of coming out as every other probability, so it's all uniform. But in hockey, low scores are more probable than high ones. So you don't have to have equal probabilities to have stochasticity. Moving on then, I'd like to just throw in a third example briefly, and this is experimental design. It was developed, or certain types of experimental design developed in the 1920s, and instrumental in that development was Sir R.A. Fisher, who here is obviously thinking about chance and purpose. And these are applicable in research where you're working usually with biological organisms, either single organisms like mice or groups of organisms like strawberry plants, and you have to distinguish the effect of treatments, which you want to find out, from the inherent variability among organisms. To do this, you use a method of random assignment of treatments to your subjects. And this allows you to disentangle these two effects and therefore to achieve your research objectives. So that's a final example. And those, of course, are all three of those examples are of systems that we have constructed ourselves for our own uses. Let's turn to one created system, biology, and I'll pick it because it's the more contentious one. And I'm going to present here the conventional account of it. And I appreciate that there are lots of challenges to the conventional account. Even will be some of the seminars given here. But we're going to take the conventional account and see what we can do about it. And in the general presentation, there are three features of biology and biological dynamics. First is continuity among species of some sort. Usually for the multicellular species, tree-like continuity and connections. The next feature is stochastic variation. And with DNA-based organisms, there are a number of different sources, so now they just talk about structural variation. A few years ago, you would just think about single nucleotides in the DNA being either added, deleted, or substituted for, but it's gotten more complicated. And finally, selection. And this sorts out which variations have a greater probability of reproductive success and which ones have less. And this depends on the interaction of the genome and the environment that the system is in, or at least the species in, or the breeding population. And together, those two, although they're usually thought of as separately, I think really form a stochastic exploration discovery process. So we said that the selection depends on the environment, and in fact the dynamics of the system, I think, do too. This is very much a nonlinear system, so that you can have changes in the system, species dying off, being added, being modified, even in a stable environment. In a slowly changing environment, as would be produced by changes in climate or changes in atmospheric makeup, continental drift, and plate tectonics, then there's the opportunity for the system to track these as the probabilities of reproductive success gradually change so that the system can adjust to those. There are also times of rapid or extreme change when the atmosphere gets toxic, say by a release of hydrogen sulfide gas, or gets too hot or too cold. In this case, you can get a lot of die-off, but so far on this planet, at least, there have been some organisms that have persisted, or some species that have persisted, so the whole system has persisted. Okay, this certainly is stochastic in my way of thinking because of those undirected variations which we had, which are being worked on by selection. But does it have any purpose? Is it consistent with any purpose? In particular, is it consistent with God's purpose? Well, what were God's purposes? Usually people get very vague at this point. But I'm going to be bold and go on, and we'll take our cue from Jonathan Edwards, who lived in, I guess, the early 18th century. So he decided what God's purposes were before modern cosmology or biology were developed. And he wrote a dissertation, I think it was, on the end for which God created the world, in which he concluded, after a pretty thorough examination of the scriptures, the relevant scriptures, that God created the world for his own glory, or created it to express his glory, I like to put it better. And we can think of this, if you think, for instance, of the Westminster Confession, the only thing I know about it is what the answer to the question, what is the chief end of man? Or if we modernize the diction, what is the principal people purpose? To glorify God and enjoy him forever. And, okay, if that's God's purpose, how does the dynamic biological system achieve those purposes? And I would suggest that they do it in three ways. First of all, just by its richness, the number of species that have been generated are far more than the planet could carry at any one time. So a dynamic system has more richness than a static system would, even though a static system could be pretty wonderful. And this is true even in stable environments. In periods of slow change, where the system is actually able to adjust to the changes, then it glorifies God by its harmony, by keeping in sync with it. In periods of rapid change, it glorifies God through its persistence, even though there's been a number of occasions when there's been a high die-off, 70 or 80% of the species then present dying off. It has always persisted so far on our, under our conditions, and in fact, these were opportunities for the generation of new species and the contribution to richness again. So contrary to the claim that chance means purposelessness, I would argue that systems with chance in them can achieve purposes, in particular that biology can glorify God. This is an extended discussion of this talk is given in my paper, which appeared in March. Okay.
Thank you. In increasing